The Haftarah for Parshat Emor, the 44th chapter of Yechezkel, is an amazing chapter to study when considering the relationship between the laws that appear in the Torah and the laws that appear in Navi. Most of the Navi is either historical narratives, the stories of the Nevi'im Rishonim, or prophetic poetry, the prophecies of Nevi'im Achronim. It's very rare to find actors in the Navi talking about the laws of the Chumash. And very often, when they do seem to be following the laws of the Chumash, there's sometimes a tension or a distinction between the laws that we're familiar with in the Chumash and what they talk about in Navi. And in the Haftorah for Parshat Tetzaveh, which is from the previous section of Yechezkel, we find that Yechezkel describes a series of rituals that are nowhere paralleled by the laws that appear in the Chumash. And there are numerous examples, whether it's Shimshon and the laws of Nazir. You have to wonder, how does this conform with the laws of Nazir that we find in Chumash? Whether it's Amatziah and his decision not to kill some rebels, and how does that relate to the law that appears in Chumash? But the 44th chapter of Yechezkel is special in that it really runs through a series of laws, which are laws that we are familiar with from Chumash. And Yechezkel is essentially saying the same laws that appeared and that were legislated in the Chumash apply in our day as well. Now, Yechezkel is a prophet who prophesies over time of great change. Recall that Yechezkel prophesies all of his prophecy from exile. He had previously lived in Israel, but the Babylonians exiled him to Babel. He predicts and foresees and lives through the destruction of the first temple. And then at the end of his prophecies, predicts the Jewish people returning for the second temple. And many Jews, when they went into exile, opined that the laws did not apply anymore. When Yechezkel says, we will return and we will rebuild a new temple, a second temple. And when we rebuild this new second temple, the following laws will still apply. Quoting these laws from across the Chumash, it's a clear statement to his generation that even though we are in exile, even though we don't live in Israel, even though you might think that God forsook us, the laws still apply and the laws will remain in effect when we return to Israel. And Yechezkel clearly has the entirety of Chumash open in front of him because the psukim and the laws that he addresses owe inspiration to many, many different sections of the Chumash. For example, towards the end of the chapter, he says, Hamincha ve'achatat ve'hasham heima yochalum, in Pasuk Kavtet, he says that the Kohanim will eat the mincha, the chatat, and the hasham. Now, this Pasuk shows an incredibly detailed understanding of the beginning of Parshat Tzav, the sixth chapter of Vayikra. The Torah there describes that the Korban Olah is not eaten. So the Kohanim here are not told that they're going to eat the Korban Olah because they don't eat that. And in Parshat Tzav, in Parak Zayin, it says that the Korban Shlamim is eaten by all Jews. But there it highlights their three sacrifices, the Mincha, the Chatat, and the Asham, which are eaten only by Kohanim. So Yechezkel, in this Pasuk, has the book of Vayikra open, the sixth and seventh chapter, and he says, listen, God told us in Vayikra that Mincha, Chatat, and Asham are the three types of sacrifice that are eaten only by the Kohanim, and this indeed will be what happens when we return for the second temple. And then he continues and says, V'kol cheirem b'Yisrael la that they will be the ones who receive the cheirem. Now, this is an almost verbatim quote from the laws of the Kohanim, which are found in the book of Bamidbar, in the end of Parshat Korach, in the 18th chapter of the book of Bamidbar, where the Kohanim are told, Kol cheirem b'Yisrael l'cha yihyeh. Leaving aside the machloket that Rashi cites, which also appears in the Mishnah and the Gemara and Arachin. There's a machloket hui paskin. What exactly it means that the Kohen gets a cherem, something that you proclaim as a cherem, I won't derive any benefit from it. It's going to go towards godly purposes. But the point is that in one pasuk, Yechezkel has reaffirmed to the people that the laws of the sixth chapter of Vayikra and the laws of the 18th chapter of Bamidbar are still in effect. And when we return, the cherem will go to the Kohanim, as will the Chatat, the Mincha, and the Asham. In the next verse, we learn, Vereshit kol bikurei kol, v'chol trumat kol, mikol trumosechem, la'kohanim yihyeh, that the Kohanim will get the Reshit, the first of the bikurim, the first of the seven species that grow and are brought to the Beit HaMikdash, and also the truma, the tithe, that those will also be given to the Kohanim. In addition to the temple gifts described in the previous pasuk, they'll also receive these agricultural gifts. This also coming from Vayikra chapter 18, that the Bikurim and the Truma goes to the Kohen. And continues, Vereshit Arisotecham, titnu la'kohen laniach bracha el beitecha, that the Kohen will receive the Reshit Arisotecham, the beginning of the dough, the separation of challah, a little bit from every loaf of bread to be given to the Kohen. That is also something that appears in the Chumash, although that appears a few chapters earlier in chapter 15. So Yechezkel is saying all of these laws of the Chumash are going to apply in the time of the Second Temple. They don't entirely apply when we're in exile. But when we return, the laws of Vayikra, that the Kohanim will eat the sacrifices, the laws of Bamidbar, that the Kohen will get the Cherem, the Truma, and the Bikurim, the law that they will receive the first of the dough, all these laws will apply when we return to Israel for the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. There are laws in Vayikra and laws in Bamidbar. There's even a law in Dvarim, which Yechezkel also reaffirms that this law is going to apply. The Yechezkel, when describing the role of the Kohanim, when they return to Israel for the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, he says that the Kohanim have a job, Bet Ami Yoru Ben Kodesh L'chol, that they will have the job of teaching the Jewish people what is holy and what is not, uben tamela tahor yodiyum, and what is tameh and what is tahor, ve'al riv hema yamdu la mishpat, and they will be standing in judgment, v'mishpatai yishpatuhu, and they will judge the people. Now the idea of the Kohanim serving as judges is a law that is found particularly in Dvarim, chapter Yud Zayin. In the beginning of Parshat Shoftim, we are told that ki palei mimcha davar lamishpat, if you don't know what the rule is, bein dam ledam, whether it relates to blood, bein nega lanega, which may be what is meant here by tameh and tahor. According to the Talmud, the differences between the different types of blood is whether the blood is tameh or whether the blood is tahor. Who you're going to go and you're going to need divrei rivot bisharecha. Again, that same word riv, there's a fight about what to do. Bekamtav elita el makom ashevchar Hashem, you should go to the Beit HaMikdash. And who will help you judge? Uvasai lakoanim alviyim v'al shofeta sheyev yamimahem, the Kohen there will help you with judgment. Now, this is a principle which is not really found in the book of Vayikra or the book of Bamidbar, this idea that a Kohen is supposed to be engaged in the judging of the people. So here we have a law from a third book, from Dvarim, that Yechezkel is reaffirming that when we return and we have a court system as well, that court system should also include the Kohanim, who have an important role in judging the people. Immediately after the Torah says that the Kohanim will judge the people in Dvarim chapter 17, it says at the beginning of Dvarim chapter 18 that Nachala lo yelo b'kerav achav, the Kohanim do not inherit a portion in the land. Hashem u'nachalato kashem diber lo. God says, I am their inheritance. And Yechezkel reviews this law as well. V'asal lehem l'nachala, ani nachalatam, v'achuzah lo ditnu lehem b'Yisrael, ani achuzatam, that they don't inherit land in Israel. So Yechezkel has reviewed many laws. Another law from Vayikra that he reviews is that a Kohen is not allowed to attend a funeral. In Vayikra, in Parshat Emor, chapter 21, it says that a Kohen cannot attend a funeral, only the close members of the immediate family, parents, God forbid children, a brother or an unmarried sister. And Yechezkel reviews that law almost identically. Yechezkel is reviewing all of these laws from across the Torah. You might think that these laws do not apply at all. They will apply. These laws will be relevant when we return. Gifts to the priests, no land for the priests, engage in judgment, not attending funeral. Now, because Yechezkel reviews so many of these laws, he also at times expounds upon the laws. Namely, there might be laws in that Yechezkel reviews, which the Torah had also given that law, but it hadn't fully explained it, or as the Talmud says, it had the explanation of this law had previously been a tradition, halacha Moshe Sinai. Yechezkel knows what the law means because he hears that tradition, but when he's writing down the law, he includes the traditional interpretation together with the law that we know from the Chumash. So what is meant by this? So the Kohanim, we know from the Chumash, they're told on a number of occasions about not growing their hair long. It's a sign of mourning to grow one's hair long. And the Kohanim are told not to grow their hair too long. After the brothers of Nadav and Avihu die in Vayikra, Moshe tells the rest of the Kohanim, the rest of the priests, that they have to be careful not to show signs of mourning for their relatives. They were at the status of Kohen Gadol that day, so they could not mourn. And he tells them, Roshechem al tifrau, do not grow your hair long. This is not, you're a Kohen, and it's impossible to ask a Kohen not to mourn, but you shouldn't mourn, so you shouldn't grow your hair long. And the Kohen Gadol is similarly told in Vayikra chapter 21, et Rosho lo yifrau v'gadav lo yifrom, that he doesn't allow his hair to grow long. Now, from the Chumash, however, it's not clear whether this is a law that applies to all Kohanim at all times, namely no Kohen is ever allowed to grow their hair long, or whether it is specifically limited to a situation in which a Kohen Gadol, a Kohen is in mourning, that they are not allowed to grow their hair long. Namely, it's the mourning practice that is prohibited, but if a Kohen wanted to grow their hair long because they were interested in having long hair, then that would be permissible. So Yechezkel reviews this law. However, when he reviews this law, he very carefully reviews it without the limitation of mourning. So he only gets to the priests who are in mourning much later in the discussion and says, Virosham lo yigalechu, they can't shave their hair in mourning. Ufera, I'm sorry, they can't shave their hair so that they have no hair. Ufera lo yishalechu, and they can't grow their hair long. Kasom yiskemu ed roshehem, their hair should be finely, coiffed and set up. And then reviews a related law, v'yayin lo yishtu kol kohen b'vo ha-melechatzer ha-pnimit, that they're not allowed to drink wine, which is another law that also appeared in Vayikra, chapter 10. In this case, the drinking of wine is something which a Kohen may never do, and it doesn't seem to be limited to mourning. It's coupled here with growing the hair long. Both of these are not mentioned in the context of mourning. And so Yechezkel is taking a biblical law that a Kohen cannot grow his hair long and adding the tradition that this applies at all times and not just in mourning, and putting in print now the tradition of Moshe Rabbeinu. The way the Talmud puts this is the Talmud says, Davar zemi Torah Moshe Rabbeinu lo lamadnu. We don't learn this from the Torah. This particular law is not appear anywhere in the Torah in its full explained capacity. Adcha by Yechezkel vilimdanu, until Yechezkel taught us this. Gemara Gemirila, it was a tradition at the time of Moshe. Vasa Yechezkel, the Asmacha Akra. And Yechezkel took this tradition and he applied it to a verse. The Talmud uses this language in numerous places. Moed Katan Hamad Aleph, Yuma Ayin Aleph and Bebez, Zvachim 18b, 22b, Sanhedrin 22b and 83b, and in Tainus 17a. That there are all these laws that Moshe did not explain in the Torah. He explained it in the tradition. The first time the law actually makes it into print is Yechezkel. So Yechezkel is not legislating a new law. This is a biblical law whose interpretation was oral, that now becomes written in the Navi, that the growing of long hair and the drinking of wine, these laws are not limited to mourning. They apply at all times to all Kohanim. And a Kohen who serves in the temple with hair that is too long or while intoxicated, their service is ruined, and they potentially can face the death penalty. A second example of a law which appears in the Torah but not fully explained, the beginning of the Haftarah for Parshat Emor, towards the beginning of chapter 44, in 17 and 18 and 19, describes what looks like the Kohanim are going to be doing when entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. It describes the time when they go to the Chatzer Pnimi Vabaita, the inner courtyard and further inside. And there's textual parallels to what is going on Yom Kippur, because it says that that the garments used then have to be left then and cannot be used ever again. And this echoes the laws that we find in Vayikra when describing the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, that the garments that he wears into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on one Yom Kippur can never be used again under any circumstances. The Torah tells us in Vayikra, in chapter 16, Uva Aaron Elol Moed, verse 23, when Aaron will go, finish his going into the Kodesh, and he will take off his white big day bad, and leave them there, namely, leave them never to be used again. And Yechezkel echoes that. So he's echoing the laws of Yom Kippur, that the Kohen Gadol wears just white on Yom Kippur, which also appeared earlier in chapter 16 of Vayikra, and that when the Kohen Gadol wears just white, he wears them and doesn't use them afterwards. But there is a small explanation. The word the Torah uses to describe the white material used on Yom Kippur is bad. Ketoned bad kodesh yilbad, u'michnasei bad yilbash abisaro. The word that is used is bad, which is an unusual word in the Chumash. Yechezkel always clarifying these laws that needed clarification. Yechezkel clarifies that they are made out of pishtim linen. Pare pishtim yiyu al rosham. U'michnesei pishtim yiyu al mosnehem. Now, Yechezkel again is not adding anything that Moshe Rabbeinu would not have taught us. Obviously, if Moshe wrote in the Torah that the Kohen wears garments of bad, the people would ask, what is bad? And Moshe would tell them that bad means linen. It's the same as Pishtim. But as Yuma Ayin Aleph Amud Beis points out, but Yechezkel plays a valuable role, because until the time that Yechezkel came, someone might misunderstand and somebody might think that bod is a different material. So Yechezkel takes what was previously an oral tradition, that bod means linen, and he writes it down and clarifies that bod here means linen. Earlier in chapter 44, though not part of the Haftorah, there are other laws that Yechezkel also clarifies, which were not entirely clear from the Torah, but that Yechezkel helps explain. Earlier in the chapter, Yechezkel had said that Koben Nechar, a Kohen who is foreign, Erel Lev, Erel Basar, someone who is either uncircumcised, Erel Basar, or Erel Lev, who is not a believer in Judaism, and later explains further, Ayan Asher Shartu Lifnei Gilulehen, a priest who had previously served in a place of idol worship. And the Talmud in Menachot, Daf Kuftet, 109, and Zvachim Daf Kaf Beis, 22, the Talmud says, so Yechezkel here is explaining something. The idea that you're excluded from temple service if you are uncircumcised or if you no longer believe in Judaism is a law that we do find elsewhere in the Torah, this one in Sefer Shmot. So we see that Yechezkel not only had Vayikra Bamidbar and Dvarim open, but also had Shmot open. But describing the consumption, the eating of the Korban Pesach, we're told, Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo, the same words, a ben nechar, a Jew whose heart is not within, in accordance with Judaism, can't eat it. And also, Kol arel lo yochal bo, somebody who is uncircumcised. How do we know, though, that this law of the consumption of the Korban Pesach also extends to which Kohanim are able to offer Korbanot? So again, Yechezkel is not making up a new law that we didn't see elsewhere in the Torah. Now, there's an oral tradition that the words in the Torah limiting these people from eating the Korban Pesach also applies to which Kohanim can serve, and an uncircumcised Kohen cannot serve, a Kohen who doesn't believe in Judaism cannot serve, and a Kohen who had previously served in a place of another deity, another religion, cannot serve either. These things are questions that were previously traditions, and what Yechezkel does is Yechezkel writes them down, puts pen to paper in order to clarify what the law should be. The last pasuk of the chapter is yet another recapitulation, although it is somewhat intriguing why this law needs to be repeated. Yechezkel says, "Kol nevelah trefa mina ofu mina deima." Any animal which is nevelah, which is uncircumcised, which is unslaughtered, utrefa, or was sickly and was going to die within the year, mina ofu mina deima, whether it was an animal or a bird, lo yochlu hakohanim, a kohen is not allowed to eat. This is yet another law which appears in the Chumash, and which Yechezkel is just repeating the law in the Chumash, that a nevela and a trefa, an animal that was not slaughtered correctly, is not able to, according to Torah law, is not able to be eaten. What is the reason, though, in repeating this law? Why do you have to say this? Isn't this something which we would have already known that a Kohen is not allowed to eat these, not allowed to eat these things. So, the Talmud explains that Yechezkel here is again providing a important commentary. The Torah prohibited eating nevelah and trefah in many places in the Torah. The prohibition of eating nevelah appears in Parshat Re'eh, in Dvarim chapter 4, Lo Soflu Kol Nevela, Lagera Shebesherecha Titnena V'achala. The prohibition of Trefa appears in Shvot, U'basar B'sadeh Trefa Lo Tochelu. Those laws appeared in the Torah, that you can't eat Nevela and Trefa. Moreover, the idea that these carry impurity, which a Kohen would be very sensitive towards, also appear in the Torah. So in Vayikra 22:8, we have nevelah trefa lo yochal l'tama haba. They're not allowed to eat a nevelah and trefa. Again, the same words in the same pasuk, nevelah and trefa, and also focused on the kohanim. It's a much closer review Vayikra 22:8, although it also echoes from Shmot and Dvarim. But why do you have to repeat this? Isn't this a law which is obvious? Now, the Talmud in Zvachim explains that you might have thought that a Kohen is actually permitted to eat an Avilah and a Trefa. When a Chatarov is offered, when a sin offering of a bird is offered, the bird is not slaughtered with a knife. Instead, the head is removed by a nail of a Kohen. This would normally be considered an Avelah, an unslaughtered bird, but yet a Kohen eats it. So we have to recapitulate the law that the Kohanim, who normally eat, in the temple at least, meat that is bird meat that is unslaughtered, that law only applies in the temple and not outside. This chapter is a very satisfying chapter for the reasons that we've discussed, that we see Yechezkel studying the same Chumash that we study, studying it with commentary just as we do, and then as he writes it down in his Book of Prophecies, also writing the commentary. There's a number of, a small number of these reviewed laws where there's a tension between the law that appears in the Chumash and the one that appears in Yechezkel. In the Torah, we're told that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a divorced woman. Yet, when it comes to Yechezkel, he says, Amanah gusha le'ikula hem le'nashim, they may not marry a widow or a divorcee, ki im betulot mizera beit Yisrael, they're only allowed to marry unmarried women. Now, if this is referring to only a Kohen Gadol, we would understand that it's a recapitulation of the law of the Kohen Gadol, but it doesn't seem to be limited to Kohen Gadol, it seems to be referring to all Kohanim. And it concludes with the words that they are allowed to marry Almanah sheti Almanah mi Kohen, a woman who is a widow from a Kohen, a woman who was formerly married but her first spouse was a Kohen. A Kohen is allowed to marry that type of widow. Now, this is not something we find anything close to in the Chumash. We don't find anywhere that there's a difference between different types of widows when it comes to marrying the Kohanim. And there doesn't seem to, it's not the sort of small explanation like some of the other examples where we could say that Yechezkel is reflecting a tradition. The Talmud and Kiddushin on Ayin Chet Amud Bet 78b asks this question and says that the verse should be read with a slightly different punctuation. The verse should be read, Amanah gusha le'ikulahem le'nashim. All Kohanim have to be careful of marrying a divorcee or a widow. Kim betulot mizer beit Yisrael. They should only marry unmarried women. Semicolon. But there's a limitation to the rule I just taught. V'almanah asher tia almanah, but regarding the class of women I mentioned who are widows, mi kohen yikachu. Some of the Kohanim, a small subset of the Kohanim, namely all of the Kohanim who are not Kohanim Gedolim, they are able to marry them. In which case, it's reviewing the law of the Torah that most Kohanim, mi Kohen, are able to marry a widow, and that only a Kohen Gadol is prohibited from a widow and a divorcee. This does have some problems when it comes to how the verse is read. And Rabbi Yehuda in the Talmud gives a second explanation, and saying that the real point here is that the widow can only be married to a Kohen if she's a widow of somebody who is of substantial lineage. There's a general consideration that a Kohen, even when marrying somebody that they are allowed to marry, that it be somebody of high quality lineage, because there are all these limitations about who Kohanim are able to marry. And so the limitation of Almanah, a widow, is because we were really worried that the first husband might have been somebody not of a high enough status. So we say, if the first husband was a Kohen, then we know that his status, his lineage was strong, and therefore another Kohen could marry her. But if her first husband was of low lineage, then that's the only kind of widow who is excluded, in which case it is following more what we have in the Torah. A second example where at first there might be a question regarding a Kohen who went to a funeral for a family member. Yechezkel says, Acharei Tarato, after literally their purification, Shivat Yamim Yisperulo, you have to wait 7 days. Now this goes against what it says in the Humash, because in Bamidbar chapter 19, we learn that the purification takes 7 days, and after it's done, they're able to go to the temple. So the idea that they have to wait 7 days after purification does not really seem to fit what we are familiar with from the Talmud. What we're familiar with from the Chumash. The commentaries and the Gemara Moed Katan say that probably Tarato doesn't mean after the purification he has to wait 7 days, because anyway, once the person is purified, what is even the need of waiting more days? The person has already been purified. You don't have to wait any additional days. They're already, they're already ready. So acharei tarato in this case should not be translated after the purification is completed. It should instead be translated acharei tarato after the funeral is done. Tarato here not meaning after they're totally purified. It should mean after they've sort of concluded their contact with the deceased, and acharei tarato, after the funeral is done and they're no longer in contact with the deceased, then Shivat Yamim, then there are 7 days of purification which follow. Again, it's not entirely the way the Gemara and Moed Katan reads it on Tevav and Beis, but by and large, it's a reasonable reading, saying that this is just reviewing the law that we already know, that a Kohen's purification takes 7 days. The following pasuk says that after they are purified, b'yom bo'el hakodesh hachatzar b'nim v'sharei b'kodesh, when they go to serve God, they should bring a korban. This may be just a review of the fact that a Kohen on his first day of service brings a korban. This is found in Vayikra chapter 6. And Moed Katan, Tetzayin Amud Aleph, they say that's exactly what is referred to here. It's a little unusual that Yechezkel calls it a chatat, but a chatat is often an initiation sacrifice, and so it's possible that Yechezkel just has that in mind. It's also possible that he's talking here about the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, which is how we've explained a number of the other verses in this section. To summarize a very small section of Yechezkel, we find enormous parallel between the laws of the Chumash and the laws of Yechezkel, and a sustained effort on Yechezkel's part to say the same laws that we had in the time of the first temple, we have in the second temple. People aren't circumcised, couldn't eat in the Pesach in the first temple, and as such a Kohen cannot work in the second temple. On Yom Kippur in the first temple, linen garments, which were used for one Yom Kippur, and then they were set aside, so too in the second. First temple, no consumption of alcohol, no growing of the hair long, so too in the second temple. First temple, Kohanim could only marry women of high lineage, so too in the second. They're going to teach the people and answer judgment questions. They're not going to attend funerals. 7 days of purification, a sacrifice when they first serve. They eat, mincha, chatat, and asham. The cherem goes to them, truma, bikurim, v'chala, and they have to be careful to eat only kosher foods. It's such an amazing, sustained effort for Yechezkel to say, these same mitzvot that we had in the first temple, we're going to have in the second temple. We may have entered exile, but we will return again. And when we return again, we will keep the same set of mitzvot that we have always kept. It's the same Torah. It's one Torah. It doesn't change. It was the Torah of the past generations and the Torah of the future generations as well.